welcome to a very special episode of Soundography, a crash course in music, one band at a time. I'm Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And what you are about to hear is an unfiltered, uncut, unedited view that we had with Rodney Anonymous, keyboardist, lead singer for the Dead Milkmen, and an incredibly nice guy for taking the time to talk to us. Holy cow, this is some great, not just insight, but like a real good peek into that band, as well as a chance to kind of geek out over all of these other bands that he mentions as bands he loves, influences, things like that. And sure, a couple bands he hates. You're going to hear a couple of those as well. But he was nice enough to take the time. Now, because this is kind of a special episode, those of you on the Patreon feed are getting this a week earlier than we release it on the main feed, because you're patrons and we love you, and this is our way of giving you a big virtual hug. And then we give it to everybody else because it's like giving another slightly smaller virtual hug to the people who aren't patrons.
It's the side hug. The patrons,
it's the side hug.
The patrons get the front hug.
I'm not gonna put down my beer before I hug you. But
the patrons get the front hug. The regular listeners get a good side hug.
Side hug, and you might feel, you know, the cold drips of condensation from my beer going down your back on side huggers. I'm doing it too. We just got off the phone with them, or just got off Skype with them, and I feel like I've got this vocal energy that I've got to get out. It was fantastic. Really was fantastic. Why talk about it any further? We're going to give it to you right now. This is our Skype interview with Rodney Linderman, better known as Rodney Anonymous, from the band The Dead Milkmen.
That's what I thought it was. Yeah, you have a figure of the cops, you know, before they kick down the door.
That's right. Well, know. You need to, and if they ask, I mean, you got to ask, is this a cop? Because we have to tell you if we're cops. That's the rule.
Yeah.
We're not cops.
I was like the young ones. Open up, pigs. We use that one all the time around here. We knock. Open up, pigs.
Look at this, young ones reference right off the bat.
Yeah, I was at a party once where, that was like in Philly. Even before, I think the young ones, or we used to do a thing where, like, somebody knock at the door, and we would say, like, oh, it's the cops or whatever. And I was at a party one time, and, you know, we'd open up for whoever, obviously not the cops on our side. And I was at a party one time, I was like, it's the cops, and I opened the door, and yep, sure enough, it was the cops.
So, you know, at one point, that was going to have to be the case. It was inevitable.
Yeah. Yeah. We once had a deal with the cops in a hotel in California, hotel in L.A., we were having a loud late night party and someone called the cop.
So. Oh man. Yeah. And then they'll show up in LA for sure. Jeez. Well, especially at the Hotel California.
Yeah. We gave him Dave Blood because he'd come down. He had like sleep apnea and he slept with a stuffed rabbit named Fred Lettuce. And he came downstairs. He happened to show up like right before the cops did. So I told the cops, this is a weird party too, because Kinky Freeman, he ran for governor of Texas at one point.
Yes.
The Jewish cowboy. He turned up at the party in the hotel room. And I turned around and I'm like, that's Kinky Freeman. So I was like, yeah, I thought it was hallucinating. But when the cops showed up, I basically told him that, you know, I was afraid of Dave, who was completely out of it just from his sleep apnea. He would not wake up for hours.
Right.
So they were staring at this guy in like his pajamas with a stuffed rabbit. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. We used to have him answer the door in the morning when we all lived in the same house. Sorry to go off on a tangent there.
But I love it.
That was great.
I can't stick to subject. So yeah.
That's all right. I think actually it's probably some of the best stuff. And God, Hammond, I hope you're recording.
As soon as it hit dial, it was going.
Oh. My mind is a leaky vessel. So.
That's cool. Well, at any point, if you want something off the record, just say, this is off the record, guys.
I would never do that. Like, I think you should just put everything out there. You know, when I grew up, I always hated like Rolling Stone magazine because the interviews are always the same thing. It's like, well, I double track this with a 12 string. We're really enjoying ourselves.
Right.
Like, being a musician, I know how miserable being a musician is. So I'm like, why don't these people ever talk about interesting stuff? And so I decided that, Morrissey lived in his head before he became like a singer for a band. In other words, he thought, if I'm ever a singer for a band, I'm going to do this. And then I'm going to sing Into Roses. I'm going to write Marry Me on my chest and then, you know, rip it. I'm going to stop showing up for shows, I guess, was part of his plan. But, I always thought when I was a kid, I would read these things like, God, these are awful. Like the two things that always happen is like there was some interview with some old fart who was just going off about how excited they were to be working on the new album. And then every week, Rolling Stone, or every, I think it came out weekly or maybe monthly, but there were seemed to be a lot of old blues people who were influences on the Rolling Stones dying.
Like, oh, really?
This long, somebody would have to write every month a long sort of like
obituary
column for. I almost said the long autopsy. Well, I would have read the autopsy column.
I mean, Rolling Stone's in depth, but I don't think they're that in depth.
Delta Willie was found behind his blue jacket, you know, and then they cut him open. And then, like, there's just certain things I hope you find in the stomach of a blues band, like a harmonica. You know what I mean? Right. If you cut them open, there's not a harmonica in his stomach.
Blues musicians are like the great whites of musicians. They just eat everything.
That's right.
Yeah, the great whites. Yeah, like musicians, like they should. Yeah, I always see there's a show on autopsy. And God, I hope if I finally die, I hope they televise my autopsy. I hope there's some interesting crap that happens. I'm probably going to die an immensely dull death. So.
Well, kind of weird for me to say, I hope that's not the case, but it seems like a weird thing to say either way.
It does seem like a weird thing to say. I'm just like, gee, I hope you don't pass quietly in the night.
I hope it's spectacular.
Yeah. You know, Jaco Pastorius got killed in a fight over a woman, and then his dad played a bongo solo in his coffin.
Right. That's the one.
If my dad outlives me, I'm going to be cremated, but I want to, maybe he can play it on my urn.
Hey, have you seen that documentary about him?
No, I haven't.
It's really, really well done.
Again, going back to Dave Blood, he was fascinated with it and just said, the whole family was strange. And he told me the story about the bongo solo. But I should see the documentary. I don't usually watch. I didn't until recently read any because I had to do it for a book review. But, not like a book review like Billy, but a book review, but like a review of books. And I wouldn't read books about rock and roll. And then they asked me to review Richard Hell's I Dreamed I Was a Clean Tramp. And I read that, and then that got me. After that, a friend of mine loaned me Just Kids. And Joe, long before David Bowie died, had got me Bowie on Bowie, which is another just great read. So I had read all these rock and roll things. And normally I avoid those because, again, it's the tallest reading. And I will, and I'm saying that. And I Dean once bought me a book, or I have it right here on my shelf, about the vocoders. It's called How to Recognize Each. Yeah, it's a really good book. And my wife was like, you and Dean are like the only people who would ever read that book. I'm like, yeah, probably. So,
So that's interesting.
Really technical reading.
So you're really into music history as well, then? Like, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was into avoiding music history. Most music history is most rock and roll history, music history is completely Stalinist in that somebody went and chopped out all the parts that didn't quite fit the narrative. Like, if you're sitting and seeing something, I hate the Beatles, which is me and Richard Hell, the only people on the planet that hate the Beatles. If you see a documentary about the Beatles, they never mention the Beatles cartoon. Why?
Oh, right.
It doesn't fit the narrative. Yeah, not Yellow Submarine, but
the TV cartoon they did. Yeah,
that's kind of sad that bands don't have cartoons anymore.
We were just talking about that the other day. Like, who would get it these days though? Would you have like a Katy Perry cartoon?
I was talking about like real bands, like Barton Spear or Angel Spit. If there was an Angel Spit cartoon, I would get up early every morning. Like, you know how they had that brief period of interesting cartoons when they would have like Mighty Mouse, Pee Wee's Playhouse. I forget what else is in that block. And I would get up, no matter how hungover I was on Saturday morning, I would get up and watch that. I would call the hotel and I would leave a wake up call for super early and get up and I would watch that. And then I really enjoyed that. I think that maybe that's the route that a lot of bands should take. Is going the cartoon route.
I got it. Cannibal Corpse, the animated series.
Any sort of black metal or black gaze. They had on the podcast Talking to Ghosts podcast, which isn't about talking to ghosts. Although my friend Andy Dean was had a great idea. He wanted, because they keep getting people asking them. they don't look into the podcast. They just see the title and they're like, we believe our home is haunted. So Andy wanted to go. He wanted to film them. He wanted to take a guitar tuner. Are these people's home? I was like, oh, I so want in on that.
That would be great. It would be awesome. A great sideshow. Yeah, for sure.
I am sensing some sort of, there's a cold spot here, you know, and I just walk behind him and maybe whistle different, you know, in different pitches. I'm saying right. Whistle different, but I probably couldn't even whistle in different pitches. I'm pretty tone deaf.
Well, Ground, does the letter J mean anything to you? I keep seeing the letter J.
I'm seeing the letter M. those things are complete. There's a great whole, I'm a big fan of James Randi, and he has a whole collection of psychic fails. You know, like I'm seeing the letter now. It's tragic. Nobody I know has a vowel in their name.
No, it's so rare to find.
You can get people to believe. As Voltaire said, you know, anybody can get you to believe an absurdity can get you to commit an atrocity. So always think of that when I'm watching those. Like, oh, dear God. Yeah. All right, one off.
No, that's all right. Anytime, man, that's great. Go ahead.
Yeah, sorry.
I was going to move to the I was going to move to the talk about Soundography, but I don't want to stop you, man. I mean, when you're on a tear, the last thing I want to do is redirect you. But
the hell that the guys in the band's been through with me for like the last 40 years. I'll get in the band and I'll start talking about Thomas Kincaid, the painter of light, and I won't shut up. I across PA and I complained. I felt so bad for them, they take it nicely, but I just complained the whole way about Thomas Kincaid.
Oh, it's funny. So for some reason, I'd expect that the whole band would be like that, though. Like, you guys would all go off on these weird tangents of connections.
We give each other. Well, it's because you're in a band, so it's like somebody takes this and then somebody jumps in and they riff on this or that. And also it depends on like who's in what mood to talk. I will do anything to keep them from turning on the radio. Mm-hmm. Because their musical tastes and mine are completely different. So I'm like, I'm just going to badmouth Thomas Kincaid from here all the way to Dayton.
So. Oh man! Well,
if I can avoid hearing Wilco, I will keep going all the way across the country.
Right,
to have Mountain Thomas Kincaid.
Anything to keep him from turning it on. That's funny.
Oh God!
That's a testament to having a nice big tour van or tour bus where you can have opposite ends that you can all hide out at.
Yeah, I don't really have. I don't think we'd ever get one of those again. We had one of them once. Mm-hmm. A tour bus, because you're traveling these huge miles, and sometimes you have to go from Salt Lake City to Seattle, and it's just mm-hmm. Back in the plane days, it was just the march is kind of been more pain in the ass now, but I don't know why we just didn't fly anywhere. I guess they thought it'd be fun. Well, plus you have three or four bands on the bus, so
right. No, makes sense.
That wasn't great. No,
it doesn't sound like it.
In the bus, because there are a lot of rules in the bus.
You got to wait till it stops. Oh, geez.
Yeah. And people's depiction. I always meet these young people like, oh man, you toured, not so much now, but before, you toured in a tour bus and everything. That must have been awesome. I was like, yeah, one time we had a guy come on who was an expert in Chaucer, and he talked about these certain jokes that were in Canterbury Tales. I usually lose them about there. It's clearly not the most, it's not their vision of what rock and roll was.
No, they want to hear about drug-induced comas and groupies, stuff like that. They don't want to hear.
Don't really have any of those stories, fellas. It's pretty dull. Yeah,
I think that's mostly the case. We glamorize it as fans. We kind of want to hear those stories, but.
And I love the podcast that you did on us, but I just want to point out a couple of things.
Yeah, please do.
We're not from Chester, Pennsylvania. Joe and I grew up in a town called Coatesville, and that is where people from Chester went to get mugged. Every other city in the state looked down upon Coatesville. So his Talcum. Very few people know this. The reason he called himself Joe Jack Talcum, we had a friend named Garth Scott. And Garth was in a locker room one time, gym locker room, when we were in high school. And some guy was like trying to find talcum powder so he could talc out. And Garth, he kept saying, I got to talc out. And Garth just thought it was so funny. And Joe would say it every now and then and make Garth laugh. So Joe just kind of took it as a last name. And then the band came about because Joe's family, I think Garth had been part of this too. They would invent these games. There's a If you ever say anything about Stephen Hawking, his family would invent these incredible games that go on forever. And Joe's family was the same way. And Joe had invented a payola game. And in the payola game, you paid to go up and down the chart, obviously. And one of the bands was, I think, I don't know if it started as a Dead Milkman, but he basically had to go back and create, they wrote the short stories that he did as a way to create a backstory for the band in this thing. They started out a folk band called the Sunflower Children of God, and then they became this other band. So, and he would begin to fill it in, so it became fun to fill it in. And then once you have it sort of two-dimensional, you want to take it out to another dimension, so that's when he began recording the music.
Oh, wow.
So technically, then, I've lived in his imaginary world
with all these fake bands.
Yeah, I'm 55 years old. Okay, next right. year I will celebrate 40 years living in Joe's imaginary world. Sort of character.
That's awesome. So, did you guys have the nicknames then before the band? Were you know, if Joe's nickname Joe Jack Talcum came before that in high school, or did it come in around the time of the band?
No, it came in just so he could have a character for the band.
Gotcha.
And then,
okay.
When I got, and back then, this is in the sort of breaking days of punk. This is in, you know, Sex Pistols and The Damned. Sure. Now, you guys have referenced the Beastie Boys, but they didn't come till much later. Yeah. I was in college when the Beastie Boys hit, and the first thing we heard from them was Cookie Puss. We didn't hear the old Young and the Useless stuff when they were Young and the Useless. Mm. We didn't hear that till later. But The Damned, particularly, who we loved, they had, you know, there's Rascabies, Dave Damian, and Captain Sensible. So we just assumed you had to have a fake name. And we, you know, all the punk bands that we knew of back then, they all have fake names.
Sure.
And my favorite writer was Anonymous. You know, I always say, just quote it to Anonymous. I thought, I'll just be that. So that's how I got my name. Dave Rudd was originally going to be Mr. Pasta because he was a pasta expert. He could tell you, like, oh, that's a San Giorgio number 7. And I went, that was kind of weird, but he took blood because he's a was a big fan of a lot of funk bassists and soul okay. bassists. And then Dean Kling, well, it rhymed,
sure.
you know, obviously. So Dean came up with that, you know. And probably because he's sort of the most genial member of the band. Like, there's literally no dirt you could dig up on that guy.
Oh, really? Okay, so it fits. It perfectly fits. It's funny though. I mean, I'm imagining Dave Mr. Pasta as opposed to Dave Blood. I think that would definitely set a different message.
The weird thing was, I hang out with Dave's brothers fairly regularly. Dave's brother Joe is one of the guys behind Metropolis Records, my favorite record label. And I run into him at a lot of, like, I go to a lot of goth industrial shows, obviously. And so I run into him at them all the time. And there's a really good bar in Wilmington called Bar 13 down there. And they have a goth and crew regularly. A lot of people play. Great, great place. I just got down there. And I was hanging out in, with Dave's brother Joe. And they have this restaurant sort of across the street called Mr. Pasta. And supposedly the guy that runs Mr. Pasta is pretty cranky and likes to chase people out of the parking lot. But Joe was like, they stole my brother's name. I should sue them.
Actually, he could have gone by Al Dente Dave.
There you go, Dave Al Dente. He could have gone by Dave Al Dente.
I like to think that the guy was named Mr. Pastoroni or something, and he went through Ellis Island. And they're like, nah,
they shortened it.
Now on. Yeah. Just took it out. Yeah. You can't know. It's Mr. Pasta. Mr. Pasta scene or something. No, you're Frank Pasta now. Not even Frank Pasta, just Mr. Pasta.
It's Mr. Pasta to you. Yeah.
And your wife sees Mr. Pasta too, because we don't want to have to fill out any extra form. So that would be pretty amazing. Other thing I want to point out, I think this is like is the Daniel Johnson thing. Rocket Ship is a cover of a Daniel Johnson song. We met Daniel through Glass Eye. We were living in Texas and recording, and they were like, well, there's this really interesting guy. He came through with the carnival, and the carnival moved on and left him behind. So we're like, well, we got to meet him. And we came over, we heard him play some songs. Kathy from Glass Eye sort of discovered Daniel. And then she put out a great album of the songs called Dead Dog's Eyeball. And he came over and played some songs. We were like, hey, why don't you come open up for us? And we were playing like a couple cities over or something. So he came and he insisted that they leave the back window open. And as soon as he played, he ran out the back window. But he also had a song called Casper the Friendly Ghost. And I told him I liked it. And he, the next day, he handed me all the lyrics, and it said, like, you know, at the top it said, like, copyright Daniel Johnson. And Daniel Johnson was crossed out, and my name was written in. And I'm like, Daniel, I can't accept this. And yeah. then there's a documentary about him. Hipsters just really ruined Daniel Johnson. One of the many reasons I despise alt-rock and hipsters is because they latched on to him and just, you know, oh, he's quirky and crazy.
Almost ironically. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. And I once saw Scratch Acid once, and I had Daniel Johnson on one side of me and Gibby on the other. And they're trying to talk to each other. I'm thinking, my brain is going to implode. But that's Gibby from the Butthole Surface. But the thing with the there's a documentary about him. My favorite part in it, and this kind of sums up what it's like to be in the Milkmen. There's one point they're looking. Daniel Johnson had drawn a picture of my tattoo, and they're looking at this thing in the documentary. Going, oh, we don't know what this could mean. We've never seen it before in his art. And I saw this. I'm laughing my butt off.
That's my tattoo.
That's my tattoo. But I was like, no, it's totally something up. Yeah, I don't want Daniel Johnson. The people who are fans, sort of now, I don't want them. You know, latching on to,
right.
to anything right. I'm ever involved with. I don't want them at our shows. And I was really, the last show I was happy with the whole concept of it because I was looking out in the audience and there were these people like in the Body t-shirts, you know, the band The Body, and or Conform Co t-shirts, getting next to people in like old punk band t-shirts. And I thought, well, this is working. This seems to be. But it might have also been because we had Caustic and Youth Code on the bill. So okay. We had two industrial bands and a surf band.
Wow.
That's our shows. Yeah.
So, and you're touring right now, right? Is that, we're catching you before a show?
No.
Oh.
No, I never tour. I try not to leave the house. I work today. Oh. I'm home. Yeah. I work in a big office for a financial firm. And then I think it's better because I'm not beholden to anybody musically. Right. In other words, people go, okay. Well, wouldn't it? Yeah, because if you, I have friends that have found a way to make it work and it doesn't compromise them. But if your music becomes your job, at least the way it was for me, then, it's not your hobby anymore. It's not fun. Like, I really look forward to getting home and I look forward to doing my radio shows tonight. I love doing that. I don't think I would do that or could do it if I was a professional musician. I'd always be off somewhere.
Right.
I got some recording for this other project I'm doing tomorrow. I'm going to get up super early for that. So I'm really looking forward to it. When you're like a professional musician, it kind of gets to be a bit of a grind. There's parts of it I love. I love creating sound and I love writing songs. Those are great, but there's a lot of kind of bullshit that goes with it. So I just, I'm much as mentally screwed up as I am, I'm in a much better place than I was. most of the voices have stopped.
most of them. And the show is the Rodney Anonymous Tells You How to Live show, yeah. Right? Okay, cool. So I want to make sure people check that out.
Tonight's the Maria Bettina or Butna dance special. Yeah. People are always like, I'm like, wait, you listen to my radio shows around her. You play a lot of old school punk. I'm like, no, absolutely not. So I'm like, oh, okay. I'm like, why are you still listening to this stuff? things moved on.
Right.
So I just wanted to ask real quick with when you guys were on Hollywood, was that as much of a grind as we kind of hinted, we kind of thought it was?
I'm trying not to curse on your show. because normally people just have to bleep the living and out of my interview. But because I knew you guys were trying to
feel free. Feel free.
It was pretty bad. I do whole interviews. There's I talked about it in the thing that I really like the best at any, although I'm really heavy in that footage. But there's when we did a thing for Weather Vane, where we're doing the prisoner cinema, they shot like a little documentary about it. And I think it was really good because the crew who did it were really good at becoming invisible. You'd almost forget they were there and you would say anything. And we all talked and we talked separately. We didn't know what each other was saying. Yeah. About the sort of misery you work really hard in a punk band. Your goal is to overthrow the music business. Mm-hmm. And I always said, and I'll side with Snod on this every day of the week. Nobody ever overthrew a system from the inside. You know, you're like, well, we'll change it from the inside.
Right.
No, you won't.
Right.
And so what happened was, we were signed for this band on the label, we're doing okay. And then Punk Rock Girl, which is the most completely different thing. I'm not even on that song, so I can wash my hands of it.
But,
it hit. Yeah. And yeah, I wouldn't. Yeah. And, you know, and then all of a sudden it's like, you know, the jock bars are having Punk Rock Girl night. And I'm glad people like it. Don't get me wrong. I think the guys did a great job with that one. I've never turned down a check because we all share in the writing. I've never turned down a check for that song. There's stuff that people have asked us to do with it. You know, like, hey, can our corporation use it? And I'm like, only if you fold it up and put it up your ass. So, you would not believe the horrible corporations that have to use that song.
Really? Yeah.
So, yeah. And yeah, so we skate on, you know, like that. But the, you know, the fact is that after that came out, then like everybody's looking at you. Human League, which I'm a huge Human League fan. I particularly love early Human League when it was, you know, the guy band. Replication, or what it's called, Replication.
Reproduction.
That's the first album. Reproduction, is absolutely brilliant. And, you know, there are all these great Empire State Human genius song. You know, and there's all these, you know, being boiled. And so, but what happened to them was Phil Oakey of the band, and which is a weird name for a guy in a synth band. Phil Oakey should be a guy and like a country. He's actually a jug player in a band. He said once they hit number one in America, he smashed the phone when they called him and told him, because he's like, what do we do now? What, you know, the whole point of this, you know, revolution. And yeah, we, oh God, you know, that's at least the guys, I mean, at least they were nice enough to say, you know, to all realize that, you know, that this was a horrible thing. And to sabotage, like, MTV. we have the trail of sabotage wherever we went. So,
awesome.
You know, the record companies want you to do these horrible things. They want you to go, like, we have to go to these, like, meet and greet things with, like, you know, like, recording artists who have nothing in common with.
Mm.
And we would always get thrown out. My friend Matt dumped a whole bunch of fake rubber fishing worms on top of, I think it was Tiffany's head, not Tiffany. Tiffany's head one time. Yeah. You know, just we were asked to leave.
Perfect.
But he was pretending to be Slash. He looked like Slash. We put a top hat on him and he had his hair down and they gently escorted him from the building. It didn't look like somebody. Yeah.
So now Tiffany's running around telling the story about how Slash dumped a bunch of fishing worms on her.
Yeah. Vernon Lee, who's a fantastic guy from Living Color. Mm. Him and I changed up name badges. He might be there either. You know, I ran into him, and I mean, just a wonderful guy. I mean, I've got nothing but great things to say about that entire, and they're still amazing band. A friend of mine went to go see them, and were blown away.
Amazing but, vocalist, absolutely amazing vocalist.
Just and way ahead of the curve. They were feeding back when, you know, feeding discs into things was unheard of. You know, you're putting floppy discs into things, and I had sampler that took them there, but you know, to see an effects rack and you see the roadie, you know, putting, you know, they were, and this was taking place in the 80s, they were super ahead of everybody, or late 80s, early 90s, because it wasn't a B B floppy B disc, it was only A ones. They were just absolutely amazing. But Vernon and I traded up name tags. So for people who are, oh, you're Vernon Reed from Living Color. Yeah. I'm in the band. It's like how completely clueless these people are.
Right.
You know, there's a great line by Phil Hendry, who absolute hero of mine. I think the man is a genius. And he's the guy who does the radio stuff where he would pretend to be a caller.
Yeah. He's great.
And, he'd say something really outrageous. He did a thing once where it went on for an hour where this guy calls talking about how he's the manager of a football team. And he told the guys, you know, look, he's got a young wife. And telling the guys, I want any of you looking at it. And as it goes on, you find out he's managing or he's coaching a peewee football team. So people start getting angry and calling in. And he's like, look, you don't know the fear of losing your son to a 12-year-old girl. Well, it's Phil Hendry said that, and so after about music people, the people that run the music industry are like, the way he compared it to, with talking about the people that run radio stuff is, it's like a theater manager that can't understand what these people are doing up on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, why aren't they wearing the same clothes they wore when they came in? That's the same sort of thing. You just encounter like so much cluelessness. I'm glad that that system died. I couldn't believe David Lowery had written a piece one time championing the old system. And I was like, these are the same people that told Amanda Palmer that, you know, that she was too fat to wear a midriff. And, you know, they're clearly not well. I mean, they would probably try to push me back out to sea if they saw me. But
No, you're seeing that so much now. What? Like bands taking, you're seeing it so much now. Bands taking back control of their music.
And Bandcamp. You know, Bandcamp is a wonderful thing. You know, everybody knows on Bandcamp says, you know, or the money I get from Bandcamp is really good. It's, you can completely circumvent. I know there's some, you know, I love Negative Game Production, great record company, Metropolis, great record company. There's a bunch of really good record companies out there that I really, Trisol's great, that I think are fine. But man, back in the day, they were just, like, it was Weasel Central. Mm-hmm. It was pretty terrible.
Yeah.
They had no idea. He's like, yeah, these, record exec guys would go, you know, I really dig where you're coming from.
We love the dead milk.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You know, this rebellion thing you guys are, and that's really what happened. It was like, you know, and then once that hit, they, you know, record company wanted me gone, you know, so they were like, you know, just the loudmouth guy with the political stances, if you could get rid of him. And, I want to know my teeth. I mean, there were times when the band was kind of struck, it just don't get him and take him along for this or now. So. I'm sure they feel bad about it, but we never talked about it.
we're all busy that night. Don't try calling us.
Like, I would get with them, like, oh, they want to go play on the radio. Like, I'm in the band too. And then basically, I think they told Joe, you know, if you play nice, you can have like a career, you know, outside of all this. And they, you know, put them to acting things. But I wound up acting. So there you go.
There you go.
And through my acting, I got to meet Michael Nesmith, which is all I wanted to do.
Oh, so wow.
That's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I mean, I've a lot of people just know the monkey stuff, but the elephant part stuff that he did.
My God. Everything he did. He's an absolute, the man is an absolute genius. And a friend of mine is a friend of the band is his road manager. Road managing that, you know, the whole the monkeys thing he's out there doing with Mickey. Unfortunately, Mike just had a quadruple bypass.
Oh, wow.
We used to cover What Am I Doing Hanging Around, but the song Daily Nightly of theirs was one of the first songs on the radio ever to use a Moog. And so Mickey had owned this Moog, and I know people want to say Moog, but that's the guy.
The synthesizer itself is a Moog, and the guy who made it. Moog.
Yeah.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So what happened was when they went back to do it again, Mike was explaining how he couldn't get all the parts to make the Moog modular. So when Mickey would sing it, Mike would do the synth sounds with his voice. So I was telling him how much I loved that he did this, and he was doing the synth sounds. I'm like, I can't, Michael, that's just talking to me. I can't. Yeah. So yeah, I meet people and I crap my pants.
So Rodney, I got a quick question.
Yeah.
So we each picked a song that we would like to hear you guys cover. Which one is more likely for you to be covered? The One Night in Bangkok or the One Vision?
You know, that's the thing is I wouldn't cover either of those. I can't say I wouldn't cover them. Those are known. I like covering real obscure stuff. Mm-hmm. I think our best cover is the cover of Little Rebel Mine, that we ever put out there, which didn't make it. I'd have been so, I'm happy. And I don't know, a lot of people don't seem to feel this way, but I'm really super happy with, Pretty Music for Pretty People. I think we nailed it. It's like the only Milkman album I can listen to. But if that would have had, if we'd been able to get the rights to include that song, which is a song by Rome, not the guy from Sublime, not that Rome.
Right.
This is Jerome Reuter from Luxembourg, that Rome, the great Rome, one of the best lyricists ever. If we'd been allowed to include that along with Prisoner Cinema, that had made that album would have been freaking perfect. The song that I'd like to release us covering, you can find it out there, we covered BMB Nation's Control. So, but out of the two, I would probably, you know, One Night in Bangkok is really tempting. I love Queen. Don't even know, I'm like the world's biggest Queen fan. My wife was blasting. My wife does teaches vocal lessons, so she, you know, plays people a lot of Queen because Freddie's voice is just
it's amazing, you know, range.
Never been anything. Other than Roy Orbison, who had that incredible range. Yeah, it's just really, he could, you know, he had like a 4-octave range, just absolutely amazing. Oddly enough, supposedly Wayne Newton has a 3-octave range.
Oh, really?
I thought that was, yeah. But I'm working on getting an octave. I'm like a Two octave range. Excited about that. But the I don't know. One Night in Bangkok. They're good. Both songs are good because they're sort of the same era, and they both have a certain decadence to them. Mm-hmm. I like a song that has a bit of decadence to it.
Yes.
Yeah. So that is the explanation to that. So if there's if there's like a hint of decadence in it, like Sex Dwarf, you know, and if I get depressed, I'll put on Sex Dwarf by Soft Cell, and I suddenly feel. That's what I was doing. You guys were talking about. That's another thing I had to mention. You were talking about you'll dance to anything.
Oh yeah.
And you're saying, well, why did you say this? Literally, I'm not making it. And by the way, I'll point this out, and people will tell you, I'm married to the gothest woman alive. I have tons of goth industrial friends. I do lots of remixes. And it's weird for me because I'll do a remix. I was in a club and I heard my friend Steven, who's also in Ego Likeness, has a thing, Stoneburner. And I did a remix and they were playing it in this club I was in. I'm like, that's my remix. And these people are looking at me like, sure it is, old man. But I get that a lot. I also get people tell me they like my son's remixes. I'm like, oh, that's swell. I don't have a son.
Yeah, right.
Those are mine. Yeah. But so I hang out, and I've always hung out in a lot of goth clubs. A lot of my girlfriends have looked exactly like Susie Sue. So much so that if you misplaced one of them, you know, like in a club, you're like, oh, geez, which one?
Where am I going to find? Yeah, I'm going to find you.
Yeah. The lines in that song come from the fact that this was, I was hitting these clubs around the time of what they call it. I think it's probably second when you got, and it was kind of very super serious. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like, the bats have left the castle, the vampires roam tonight. I'm like, oh, and everybody was just like, you know, this is kind of stuck up its own ass. Now it's fantastic now. You know, I mean, you know, goth industrial now is, you know, at a place where it encompasses everything. You know, you can consider Boy Harsher to be goth industrial, mm-hmm. you know, which is, you know, and you can consider Zola Jesus to be goth. Mm-hmm. It's almost like where punk was this great blanket term for all sorts of cool stuff. That's, I think, kind of where that scene is now. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, and a lot of the older bands like Clan of Zymox, you know, new Clan of Zymox album is brilliant. They're playing here in Halloween. I'm super psyched for it. And
oh, wow. Didn't know there was a new Clan of Zymox. Wow.
Oh, my God. The last Clan of Zymox album, freaking awesome. A lot of people have done like really interesting things. So I used to go, and I still do it. This is the thing. I don't drink. I won't drink for 24 hours before show because I don't want to risk having, I'm going to have one beer and then I have 10.
Right.
And it's people are not paying to see me hungover. They're not paying to see me drunk. And, you know, it's I've seen bands where, you know, oh, isn't it funny? We're out here and we're looped. And I'm like, yeah, you suck. and I'm not good to begin with. So I'm even worse if I have some booze. But what happened is, I would go to these clubs. And just about every song I write, somebody else has actually written it for me. They've actually said the stuff that, like Stewart, some guy actually really did. And the guy was huge. And he was nuts. He's like, yeah, I like you because you know what the queers are up to. And he started talking about the Soil. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, dude, this is so insane. Yeah, you have to make you a character in a song and do it, you know. So you have to do it as the character. I don't want people to actually believe I would believe that. Although,
right,
you know, I've learned I don't do character from a character perspective a lot because people misunderstand that. And so what happened with You'll Dance to Anything, literally somebody said that in the club. Somebody went out to go dance to this awful tune. And so I said, oh, You'll Dance to Anything. And I'm like, oh, and then I like so many of the bands in that song. Just about all mine. I love Depeche Mode. But somebody in the club said Depeche Commode. And I owned a DX11 because it had the what they call the white glow patch, and that was the patch that sounded like, you know, the lines that someone's doing in Blasphemous Rumors, but that sound. So I had that. I bought all that stuff, and I just basically stood there and just I think that whole song just came from. I was just kind of like trying to remember, okay, what song played what after when we were doing the bands, and then I ran out of bands. So I think I invented a band called like Naked Truth or something.
Sounds totally realistic among all the other ones.
Yeah. I was just like doing it, but the goth people got it. Like they didn't think it was mean. So right. I still go to clubs and somebody will put it on. And I'm like, and we did it, Caustic, who, you know, great friend of mine and an absolute freaking genius. Matt Benally, who was Caustic. We took it and I sampled a bit of it and we used it as like the main part of a song not that long ago for a remix. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I But they got it instantly. The art, I know I say the word, line actually came from two gay guys who that was their term for their clique, and they had chest bumped and said, "Yeah, art." I'm like, oh.
See, that makes it better now.
Yeah, so what happened was, like, people got it sort of instantly in clubs, yeah. And I would go out, you know. But, yeah, there was, and I always say, well, I think dance music. Because it's not too long after that came out, but all the more sort of interesting bands. You know, I don't think that Shaquille from Android Lust would have any idea who I am. But I noticed that, like, you know, not long after that, intriguing bands like Android Lust began appearing. So I think people began to say that, you know, there was a fix and that, and still I get to contribute. I'm a huge Assembly 23 fan, and I gave Tom Shearer, when I was out in, we both have the same old sampler, again, takes this, and I don't really use it for much, but he's got one that he actually uses. He brings the samples down to a low sampling rate. They're awesome. I gave him a bunch of discs, and he took one of the sounds from them. It was like a flute sound I had, and bought, you know, lowered the sampling rate, and he used that on the track, and it was actually a big dance hit. I didn't see any cash from it. But I like the subversive fact that, you know, that I had contributed to that.
Sure. I love it. Very cool. Well, we probably should start wrapping up. Is there...
Sorry about that. Yeah.
I'll
start talking. I just... No ability to shut up.
Oh, dude, we didn't know what we were going to get, and we got more than we expected. This is fantastic, and
thank you.
Love hearing the references to bands. Like, never thought I'd be talking to Rodney Anonymous about Human League, for example. Like, wow, okay, there's a terrific connection.
Big, I love them. I love the old. I'm still going to say sort of a minimalist. And there's a great one I wasn't doing now. Marie Davidson. Does it, you know, really good minimalist stuff, or dance floor. That was a really good album. I kind of ripped that off for some stuff, but there's still, I still have minimalist. I love very heavily in the super percussive stuff. So this morning, Amina, Stoneburner, of course, and I Bardensphere. Bardensphere's APOC changed everything for me.
Okay.
I know people that were like buying. I actually know people who bought Weezer albums, and I'm like, why did you buy that? But it came out like the same month that APOC came out. Why would you, first of all, there's no excuse for owning a Weezer album. But if you're going through the store and you see something called Ratitude, and you see I Bardensphere's APOC, you're going to buy APOC. Yeah, APOC was a huge, APOC was one of the fathers of, because that's why I was getting really cranky about music. And also you were right, King in Yellow, not a great album. Not a good one. I'm honest about the misses.
Right.
I think it had good ideas, great ideas. But what happened, everybody was just so excited to be back hanging out with each other again. Mm-hmm. And we would hang out after the band broke up. We'd all go out to, Dean lives out in Media, and they have these huge Media flea markets. And we'd go out there and hang out. So we all saw each other and hang out. We were just kind of glad to be recording again. But we didn't really stop, take time to think. So that's like an album for a demo. If we ever went back and revisited it, and that's how the B&B cover is how I knew it was not the best album, because we did a show where we played in a small Philly club, and we played, we just played that album all the way through. We said, here's our new album we're going to play. And people were kind of, their attention was kind of wavering. And then when we came back on, because I kept telling our manager, B&B, I love B&B, we're playing that night here in Philly. I kept telling him, don't book the show. I remember the date, December 12th. Book it any day except December 12th. So, and of course, he booked it on December 12th. And so we did Control. I showed the guys, worked it out. We did that. And everybody kept complimenting us on that. That last song you did, that was really, really good. And I'm like, yeah, that's not us. That's a cover. They weren't. I don't think they were paying attention. But when we explained that was a cover song, yeah.
Right. But, well. I like the covers too, especially when it's got a great spin on your Liddy the Tattooed Lady that you did for the Dr. Demento thing this year was fantastic. So
yeah, I did that because I didn't want to do it, but the song. But I didn't want to do the album originally. I'm like, why? Why? But then I found out Rasputina. If more figure called up and said, "All right, listen, there's an active volcano, and I need you to jump into it," I would jump into the Laura, I think. Is a genius, and you can't really. We almost got to play a show with them, but then there was a last minute emergency on the Laura's side. But Rasputina were one of those bands that really kind of saved me. I'll put Angel Spit in that corner too. There was a point where I just really was fed up with music, and you know, that was around like the grunge period. Oh God, and and so what happened was, and then all of a sudden, I'm like, wait a minute, there are these three women playing cellos. I credit my wife. I think my wife turned me on to Rasputina.
Their cover of Barracuda was the thing that got me into them. That amazing cover.
Have you seen ever seen them live?
No, I got to look for next time they come through.
Live, maybe close to a dozen times, and every time I have a great story that came out of going to see them. So that was they were like, well, and I was like, okay, I'll do it. But I was just like, at first I was like, why does this exist? And I stopped questioning. And then we got to do, like I said, and that's. Groucho Marx is a hero of mine. So I, you can't not do Lydia the Tattooed Lady. So I was happy with that in the end.
Very good.
I guess. Yeah.
Well,
I got to meet Dr. Demento a few months back. Yeah.
Oh, did you as part of that project?
Yeah. He was in town. He was signed, and he had Napoleon the 17th when the guy who said they're coming to take me away. It was pretty weird hanging out. And we just went down to, but it was record store day, so I had to go to this other record store. I didn't get to go to the record store I usually frequent. So I was like, I'm looking for like all the dark, angry music that they only have at my record store. I'm like, it doesn't seem to be here. Who is this James Taylor man?
He's way too cheerful.
Who are these Beatles? I know nothing of them. Where's the good stuff? Where's the This Morn Omina? Where's the Unternall?
Right. Awesome. Well, all right. So one more time, I want to tell people they can find you at RodneyAnonymous.com. That's the site for the show. Say it again. I'm sorry. What needs to update?
No, I said I should update my website.
Oh, well, I'm looking at it right now. It looks looks great. And you're putting up
probably
a new show.
Fairly fresh.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you had a show last month. You got a new show that you're going to be working on tonight, and looking forward to checking this out.
I pre-record them, so I have to babysit them when they're on the air, because nobody understands that they're not live. So my friends would be like, oh, we were all hanging out Friday night, but we were listening to your show, and we wanted to come get you, but obviously you're on the air. But I'm not on the air. I'm home. So I keep an eye on it, because first of all, sometimes it starts late, and the show before me plays like indie rock. And so I have to explain to people, like, I am not playing Imagine Dragons. That is the show before me.
Right.
And I just wait. When it gets angry and weird, that's my show. And then the end of another program got put on instead of the end of mine. So, like, the last part of my show, the last 15 minutes was that. And one time all of our servers went down. During the, when they were broadcasting it, I'm like, where's my show?
Right. Well, that's the one of the risks you take when on this digital age that we're all in, is that, it's all, all has to be spun up somewhere.
Trying to explain to older people, you're trying to explain that, they're like, well, it's a radio show, but I can't find it on the radio. I'm like, it's radio on the computer.
Just
work with it. Yeah.
It's such a gap that we have to explain with that sure.
Yep.
Well, very good. Well, Rodney, thank you so much for your time. This has been, this has been awesome.
Oh, thank you. I enjoyed speaking with you guys. And I'm sorry I didn't catch the, I haven't caught the Genesis show yet. I like Genesis better with Peter Gabriel. I'm not a big fan of Genesis with Phil Collins.
Yeah, then that one was the first one of the season. Yeah, so
I'll give you the
get you a link.
Yeah.
You can check it out.
I thought I missed
episode 52 is our Genesis with Peter Gabriel through Peter Gabriel's solo.
Yeah,
work.
That one I want to hear.
Yeah. And we'll tell you to go ahead and stay away from the Weezer one we did.
Was it just you guys going, why?
45 minutes of that.
Actually, if you want to hear us do that, if you want to hear us do that, listen to Third Eye Blind.
There you go. Yeah, that was episode.
There's a whole bunch of bands like that, like the Spin Doctors it's like, and again, I'm not the best musician in the world, but, I just saying, like, why did you choose this route? Like indie alt rock, that's what that is. It's like, it's music of all. It's like the Spin Doctors, but with but with a guy looking at his shoes or something.
Perfect.
No. Like, you can pay me to see Animal Collective is what I'm saying.
Right. Awesome. All right. Well, thank you, Riley, so much for doing this. And have a good night.
All right. Oh, thank you. Yeah, I got to go do about a ton of stuff. So I'm going to go hang up, pour a glass of wine, and then go do the start uploading a bunch of crap.
Awesome.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.